Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Hey, you want that to go?
Takeouts, get your takeouts. I'm John Hockenberry, your Mr. Froggy correspondent here on the program. Let's remind you of a story that just broke. The runoff election in Afghanistan has been canceled following the withdrawal of Abdullah Abdullah, the opposition candidate who is challenging Hamid Karzai. But our first takeout of stories we want you to be following on top of this week comes from Todd Zwillick, Takeaway's Washington correspondent. Good morning, Todd.
Hey, John. Good
the
morning.
The Congressional Budget Office says that for all of this arguing about the public option in the health care reform debate, only 2% of people are expected to actually use any public option if it exists. That seems to be the headline this morning.
Yeah, that's right. That might affect the healthcare debate this week. By the way, the Democrats in the House plan to try to get their big healthcare bill on the floor by the end of the week, by Friday probably. Leadership has already warned members to be prepared to be in Washington and voting over the weekend next weekend. So they're planning on having this debate. You mentioned the Congressional Budget Office. Yeah, 2% of Americans would sign up for the public option. That's the estimate. And really, it's very interesting because on one hand, you know, it negates the argument that this is a giant government takeover of healthcare, right? 2% of people are using it. On the other hand, it negates the argument that this provides any meaningful competition to private insurers. So both arguments on both sides of this ideologically seem to be undermined, and it sort of starts to make you wonder whether the public option in its current form, this negotiated rate form, has any real use at all, right? Unless you believe it's just the camel's nose under the tent to get a government takeover of healthcare later, which maybe it is.
Very quickly, the CBO has been asked to assess cost. Did they assess a cost of this 2% participation?
A cost of it.
Yeah, is it billions and billions and billions? I mean, is it an expensive 2% or kind of a non-starter?
Well, like the Senate bill, the bill is basically deficit neutral over 10 years, which means after 10 years, it actually reduces the deficit by a small amount, $9 billion, which in Washington, you know, $9 billion is you buy a cup of coffee with that.
All right. Very quickly, some leaks and revelations over the weekend of ethics committee documents suggesting that some lawmakers have some problems they have to deal with.
Yeah, basically a security breach from the House Ethics Committee. You know, they do their business in secret, and there's a reason. They investigate a lot of people. Most of those investigations usually come to nothing. Good government people want them to be more open. Well, a document got leaked, and just to bring people up to speed real quickly, there are nearly 30 House members under investigation. Many of these were known. The biggest one is investigation of Pennsylvania Congressman Jack Murtha, a very powerful appropriator, his ties to a lobbying group who he was steering projects to. What we did learn from that is that investigation goes a lot deeper than Murtha. Mm. There are 7 members of his appropriation subcommittee, Republicans and Democrats, involved. So people are going to be watching that. And John, the last thing I'll tell you real quickly. People on the Hill are a little bit disappointed from the news from the New York 23rd because people do love to say Skazafava in Washington, and we're not gonna get to say
congressional race we talked about earlier this morning. Todd Zwillick, Takeaway Washington correspondent from Washington. Thanks.
And now we're going to go to business with Louise Story, finance reporter for our partners, the New York Times. If you thought that Madoff going to jail was the last we'd hear of Bernie Madoff, you were wrong. So what we're hearing now, Louise, if I get this right, is that from these documents the SEC has released, not only was it ridiculous that they didn't catch him at the time, but after they interviewed him, he kind of was hoping he was going to get caught earlier. Is this all correct?
That's right. He did a jailhouse interview. The inspector general of the SEC went into the jail in June and interviewed him, and he almost complained about how the SEC missed this. For instance, he was talking about this 2006 inspection where they came in and he says they really could have caught him, that it would not have been difficult to catch him.
It was clear. Completely clear.
And then he says afterwards they sent him a letter with a couple of violations and he says to himself, what the heck? Are you guys nuts with this nitpicking? After 2 months, they found 2 to 3 nitpicky things, and they were wrong about those things. Like, he was insulted they didn't catch him.
He's probably saying, you could have saved me a lot of trouble if you just caught me about a decade ago, right?
Right. Well, he did say, he said, literally, I wish they caught me 6 years ago, years ago.
Because there would have been less money involved and less damage, right?
He didn't explain in here why he wished that. He did in here talk a lot about the nightmare he had been living, and so maybe he just, you know, had wanted to get out of this nightmare But he said he wished they had caught him.
So the SEC is a watchdog, kind of more like a toy poodle, right?
Well, what he had to say about the SEC was not flattering either. He said, look, these guys aren't rocket scientists. That's the problem. And he also talked about how he was friends with so many high officials at the SEC and at other financial areas, agencies. For instance, he said he knew Leavitt very well. He was a former commissioner
of the SEC. Arthur Leavitt, sure.
Mm-hmm. And then he talked about Mary Shapiro, who is the current head of the SEC. And she's the one who's got to go in there and turn this agency around. And he said she was a dear friend. And she's and he said, she probably thinks, I wish I never knew this guy. Because they were friends, and, you know, now she's got to crack down there.
Okay, well, I assume that we're going to hear about changes at the SEC. That's Louise Story, finance reporter for our partners, The New York Times.
All right, memo to John Hockenberry, do not speak about the University of Oregon with Ibrahim Abdul-Mateen with our last takeout for this segment, Takeaway Sports contributor. If you stayed up last night and you were a Yankees fan, boy, you had a smile on your face this morning, right, Ibrahim?
Without a doubt. Let's go to my buddy DJ Chazzo.
About each team compared to the Yankee teams of past. As talented as this lineup is that they feel that the sum is greater than the individual parts of this lineup. And that's what's going to win them a championship.
So DJ Chaz is very happy about the 7-4 victory over Philadelphia.
Without a doubt. And so where were you at 11-11 last night? Because that's when the score was... That's what the score was, 4-3. Yankees were in the lead. Jabba Chamberlain on the mound against Yankee record Jason Worth. He's tall. He's lanky. He's the super athlete, the kind of athlete the Giants could have used when they lost to the Eagles 40-17.
Right, yeah, that's another story.
Yeah, that's a whole other thing.
But Worth has been huge in this series.
He has. He hit two home runs two nights ago. But here comes Jabba Chamberlain, strikes him out. Bam. Raul Ibanez strikes him out. Then next up is Pedro Feliz. He hits a home run. The score is tied 4-4. We go to the top of the ninth, and that's when the Yankees took control. Hideki Matsui struck out. Jeter struck out. And then who comes up? Johnny Damon with a 9-pitch at-bat. Johnny Damon hits a single. Then he steals second. Oh. And then he steals third. And that puts Brad Lidge on the hot seat on the mound for the Phillies. And that's where it all unraveled. And who came up to bat?
A-Rod. Well, Johnny, let's talk about Damon for a moment.
Correct.
I mean, he is playing like his contract is up.
That's a good point. Well, 2004, Johnny Damon was the ultimate Yankee killer. He broke the curse of the Bambino
with
the Red Sox. He hit the grand slam in the ALCS in 2004. This is the Johnny Damon that the Yankees needed when they picked him up back then.
One more game and 3-1. The Yanks have a chance to win the series in the next game.
Without a doubt.
All right. The next game is in Philadelphia. It's tonight at 8 o'clock. Quickly on the New York Marathon.
Well, we have the first American in 27 years, Meb Keflezighi, who wins the marathon for the United States. He's an immigrant from Eritrea, but he wrapped himself in the American flag. He's the best expression of the American dream that you'll see right now in running.
All right, you were texting me about that one last night. Ibrahim Abdul-Mateen, Takeaway Sports contributor. There's your takeouts.
Hey, good morning.